And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to 3D here on 102.5 The Game, ESPN Radio Nashville. Willie Donick here with you. And today, we're down to 1D. Darren McFarland is out today. Of course, Derek Mason on a leave of absence at this point. Darren going to a family funeral today, unfortunately, so he is out. But standing in, we've had a few shuffling pinch hitters coming in, coming off the bench, and doing a great job for our station. And Steve Lehman is here with us from News Channel 5. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for coming in today.
Sort of 1D and a Steve.
1D and a Steve today. Plus, the very steady Chase McCabe back behind the glass.
As always.
What's up, guys? How we doing?
Good.
So, Steve, who roped you into doing this?
I think it was Chase.
What was the package? What was the offer? Was it a good offer to come in, or just...
It was
you got
the
nothing else to do, or
sit with you today.
Oh.
So that was a good enough offer for me.
Man.
Preds had a big win last night. I'm excited to talk about that. We got Thursday night football this week. This is the time of year. If you're a sports fan, you're just on overload.
This is this week in particular. I think all the way through Thanksgiving weekend is going to be pretty heavy with high octane stuff for sure. College football is heating up. They had the rankings came out again last night. But as you said, we were occupied watching the Predators take out a really good Washington Capitals team for their fifth straight win. So it's getting exciting over there at Bridgestone Arena.
I intro'd this last night on News Channel 5 and kind of said, the way the Preds are playing right now, it's not hard to remember what it was like last year during the playoff run. They look like a team now that could make another deep run. And I think the interesting thing to me, Willie, and I'm interested in your thoughts of this as close as you are to the team, and maybe this was predictable, but given how deep they went into the summer and some of the key injuries that they had and the fact that you had less time to train, I don't think maybe it was surprising that they weren't full steam ahead right out of the gates. And they struggled for the first week or two, but it seems like here lately, some of those guys have come back healthy. We saw Nick Bonino back in the lineup last night. You add in a guy like Kyle Turris. It seems like this team is starting to hit its stride.
It is. I think everybody's going to have patches where you're not clicking and then patches where you are. But I think the acquisition of Turris is definitely making a difference. And I still think there's more levels that they can hit, especially when they get Ryan Ellis back, which is still a ways away. But it seems like they've got guys in the right roles now. And so now you look at this lineup. Turris, in particular, seems to have sparked Kevin Fiala, and Craig Smith's pretty much played well the whole year. But if you have two lines that are really good scoring threats, it seems like it strengthens just by nature, just by default. It makes your bottom two lines much more dangerous because you have guys on those lines that still can make a play for you sometimes. And that was the case last night. Yarncroke, Mika Salamaki, those guys are on four-game point streaks right now.
Yeah.
That's not going to continue the whole year. But when you get boosts like that, all of a sudden you become very tough to beat.
Well, and if you get one guy to do it here and then another guy does it someplace else, to me the depth is what stands out about the Preds' ascension into this contender status. If you remember back last year to the playoffs, what was it? They had 22 guys score during the playoffs, and
yeah.
I think 10 different guys had game-winning goals. Maybe it was 11 different guys had game-winning goals. I mean, those types of numbers are remarkable, and that's what – set them apart to play different styles of games against different opponents and come out on top during the playoffs. I think you're starting to see that with this team too. Just the depth. We've talked a lot about with the addition of Torres and Bonino and Sissons and Yarncroke and Gaudreau even, the center of the ice for this team, how good it is there, but it's everywhere. You can move some of those guys to the wings. The depth of this team and the depth in scoring, and I heard you saying with Braden and Fitz right before I walked in here for this show, we haven't even really seen the contributions from the D-men yet that we've come to expect offensively.
Yeah, they're doing well, but when they get Ryan Ellis back and it moves, in theory, it puts P.K. Subban back with Matias Ekholm. You put Ryan Ellis back with Roman Josi. You have one right shot with one left shot. Instead of, right now, Matias Ekholm is basically playing out of position a little bit. He's playing on the opposite side of the ice than he's used to. And he's explained this, and it's hard unless you know what you're looking for, but it makes it a little trickier for him offensively. Now, didn't last night. He hit a big goal, sure. Had an assist. He played a tremendous game last night, so it can be done. But I think when you add another weapon there and you have those top four intact, it'll help offensively and defensively. So you have that to look forward to. It'll be an interesting challenge tomorrow night. Minnesota, who didn't get off to a great start, they've had three consecutive shutouts. They haven't given up a goal in about a week. So, yeah, and you've got the Predators, who on this five-game winning streak have averaged over 4.5 goals a game. So this is one of those something's got to give
yeah. For sure. But, conversely, last night Washington came in, and what was it? They were averaging 2 goals a game given up over the past 8 games. Yeah. And Holtby had come in 6-0-0 last 6 games. He gets run last night. That's how good the Preds were. The thing that stood out to me is offensively, I don't know if it's an Achilles heel necessarily, but through the time I've covered the team, which is now in its 8th season, as you look at the Preds, something that has always been kind of an issue has been getting traffic in front of the net and running interference necessarily in front of the opposing goaltender. They were all over Holtby last night. I mean, the first 2 goals came on redirects directly in front of him, which were great plays from Craig Smith and Bonino. I think that's a great sign to see, one, pucks on net, guys continuing to shoot pucks and pepper the goaltenders, but two, to have that traffic in front of the net. It just leads to those greasy, good goals that you need to be a quality team.
They went through a stretch earlier this year where I think they had a 6-game stretch when they scored like 10 goals. And nothing was going in, and it was frustrating. But I kept asking. I was like, "Do you think the quality of the shots you're getting are there?" And Peter Laviolette was like, "Yeah, we think our numbers are good at the net, and eventually they'll start going in."
They have.
And last night was an example. Just everything went in. They got the bounces where you weren't getting the bounces before. But when you get tips and you have screens and you get pucks that are bouncing around and redirecting, you got a chance. Especially against a good goalie like Holtby, you're usually not going to beat him with clean shots 3 or 4 times a night. You're certainly not going to score 6. So to get 6 on him, you need some redirected pucks. You need to get in his vision. You have to get traffic, get second opportunity. So Bonino's really good at it. He had one last night. Hartnell has been great at it. Colton Sissons, I think, as he goes forward, he's getting better and better at it. He's a good net presence guy. So the more guys you have like that, the better off. And it makes your other shooters, like from the outside, like Smith and Fiala, guys who are going to fire from the wing, even more effective.
Absolutely. To me, that was the best performance I saw from the Preds to this point of the season last night. Do you agree?
I think so. That was pretty dominant, especially the first period. And what's crazy is, all of a sudden, the Capitals had tied the game, and you're thinking, oh, boy.
Right.
Here we go. You've played this almost perfect first period, and now 6 minutes into the second period, it's tied.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like Washington's waking up, and you're going, what's going to happen? And then within a few more minutes, they got the lead back, and they started retaking control. So that's the sign of a good dominating a team capable of dominating.
And that's what was so impressive to me is you're right. I thought the first period was the best period. The broadcast announcers actually said, and I find this a little preposterous considering the Blackhawks scored like 8 goals in 10 minutes earlier this year. But they said that the first period last night was the best period they've seen from any team in the NHL this year. Again, I find that a little bit of a stretch. But it was a great period by the Preds, and you're right, to be in that position where all of a sudden then it was tied, but to not panic at all, come back, get the lead on the next shift, and then keep the foot on the gas pedal the rest of the way. I just thought it was a really, really impressive performance against a good team. I mean, remember, this is a team that's won the President's Trophy each of the past 2 seasons.
Yeah, because I think the 4-game winning streak was excellent. They did some great things in that, but they weren't dominant. They had been outshot in all 4 of the games. They had, they were wildly entertaining games. They were great games, sure. But they just didn't blow the opposition away. And they're good teams, but for a great team over the long haul, you want to have nights where you can dominate and where you can outscore somebody or you can just completely shut somebody down. And so it's nice to see that is coming around even without all of your pieces in the in the lineup right now. That's encouraging.
And the other amazing thing about this five-game winning streak is who they've beaten. I mean, we talk about Washington, how good they are. The West Coast trip, I mean, San Jose's played well to start the season. The Kings are in first place. The Blue Jackets are one of the dominant teams in the East, or at least last year, and this year supposed to be back there. The Ducks, obviously, were in the Western Conference Final. I mean, they've played some really good teams here in this stretch, and they've beaten nearly all of them.
Yeah, so that's good. Three teams in the Metro that were all well over 100 points last year, played them all in a row and beat them. That is impressive. That'll build your team confidence. Yeah. So another big test tomorrow night. Now, speaking of that, we're going to go to Pittsburgh in our next segment. So, Steve, I'm going to hit you with this. I love to look at the Football Outsiders. They have what's called team efficiency. They take your record and put it aside, and they look at special teams, offense and defense. They take your efficiency by their metrics. Too complicated to explain it in a minute here. But they have the Titans at number 19, even though their record is 6-3. Right above them, the LA Chargers at 18 and Houston at 17. And those teams' records are 3-6. They're both 3-6.
Right.
So the strength of schedule has definitely helped the Titans build this. But give me your thoughts as they go into Pittsburgh, who, by the way, is number 4 in their team efficiency. Because this is such an this is the game that I think could really get everybody engaged. If they could go to Pittsburgh and win, all of the skeptics and all the, hey, are they really that good? Should I really commit, dive in to this season? I think it would completely turn overnight with a win in Pittsburgh.
I think I agree. It's a massive game for the AFC standings. And when you look at the AFC right now, there just aren't that many good teams. And so to be three games above 500, the Titans are in a beautiful position, not just in the division, but for a wild card berth if they have to. But if you go and win at Pittsburgh against another division leader tomorrow night, all of a sudden you're talking about a bye in the playoffs. And that would change, I think, the perception around here. For the people who maybe say, how good is this team right now? I think tomorrow night would go a long way to making them believers. But the interesting thing, I think to your point about the stats, Willie, is I was asking this question last week at the midway point of the season. I said, okay, the Titans are 5-3. They're tied for first place at this point. But they haven't played all that well through the first half of the year. There's definitely another level for them to get to. And my question last week was, if you're a fan out there, do you look at how they've played, and is it a sign of worry of things to come that if they continue to play like this, at some point it will catch up with them? Or do you look at it and say they haven't played all that well, there's another level out there, and yet they're still tied for first place? Which one is it? And I think to me what I saw last weekend against Cincinnati was a team that's just figuring out a way to win. Are they clicking on all cylinders yet? No. But when push comes to shove, whether it's overtime in Cleveland, where they never should have been in the first place, or the last-minute drive last week against Cincinnati, when the chips are in the center of the table and they have to make a play, this Titans team believes they can and has this year, and that's why they're in the position they are.
That's worth a lot, I think, when you believe that you're going to find a way to win. I think that goes a long way, especially in a league that has so much mediocrity in the middle. I mean, if you want, you can probably name 4 or 5 really good teams, I guess. And even those teams, you can say, are they really that good? Are they juggernauts? I don't know. But then you got this group of probably 15 teams in the middle, and then you've got a group of 8 or 10 really, really bad teams, a few of which the Titans have taken advantage of, but they've won the games. That makes a difference. I used to hear all the time when James Franklin had the back-to-back 9-win years for Vanderbilt, well, the East was down. You know,
the East is still down.
They weren't ever good enough to beat teams when they were down before. So that is huge. These Titans teams, Titans of 2000, pick a year, 2013, yeah, 2014, they weren't winning those games. They've made a big improvement. But now, can they take the next? They're a touchdown underdog against the Steelers. We're going to find out more about the Steelers in about 10 minutes. So I'm looking forward to that conversation, because the Pittsburgh Steelers right now are 4th in the efficiency ratings, according to Football Outsiders, at 7-2. But I think they look flawed at times. I don't know. Like, their offense hasn't been quite as dominant as it was last year,
yeah,
fair to say. I mean, they're not They're rolling up the points and the yards every week like they were.
It's not unprecedented numbers like we saw at times last year, but at the same time, you have the NFL leading rusher in Le'Veon Bell. You've got Antonio Brown, who led the NFL in receiving a year ago. And you still have a two-time Super Bowl-winning quarterback back there slinging it around. So you certainly can't nap on the Steelers' offense because they've been awesome. The other thing to me about this Steelers team is I think they've gotten back to the Dick LeBeau type of defense. They lead the NFL in a bunch of defensive categories right now.
That's probably the biggest
difference. And that's been missing the last couple of years in Pittsburgh.
I totally agree. So let's look at it from the Titans' side of the ball on defense against that Pittsburgh offense. These last four games, the defense has put up some pretty good numbers. It's been against, though, the Browns. Even the week before, the Dolphins, who... They should have won that game.
If Marcus Mariota plays, they do.
They probably would have won, and I still think they got some bad calls.
Sure.
A couple of bad calls that could have maybe eked him over the top, even though Matt Castle, we know, was very limited in what he could do out there. That loss is going to sting at the end because it looks like...
Sure. If that cost you a home field...
You're
going
to be right there with Jacksonville.
Or a bye, or potentially a playoff berth. That's one you're certainly going to look back on.
So you look at who the Titans have played. Miami, 32nd in the power rankings in Football Outsiders. Cleveland, 31. Indianapolis, 30. So the bottom three. And then you throw in Baltimore, kind of the offensive rank 27th. And, of course, this past week, Cincinnati, offensive rank 24th. So this is a whole different level of offense they're going to face. But they got Cyprian back. Adoree Jackson, I think, is a different player than he was at the beginning of the year. Arakpo and Morgan are back. They have everybody. And so what does it look like standing up to Pittsburgh on the road on short rest? This is a huge test, but if they come through, again, this is an opportunity. If they come through this and you're thinking, you know what, they hung in there with Pittsburgh, then that's a whole new level of confidence.
Yeah, and the thing to me that stuck out about this team, even before they turned the corner last year, the Titans don't get a lot of national respect. They're just not on the radar. Maybe it's our market size, whatever. That I think they really relish these opportunities in the primetime games, whether it's Thursday night or Monday night. I can't even remember the last time we had a Sunday night football game. But when they get those opportunities, I think they feel like it's their chance to shine and show out. So I know even on the short week and going to Heinz Field, these guys are going to be ready to go. They want to prove something. And I think what we saw last year is, especially, and even to a degree this year, when they play one of those quote-unquote elite teams, that's when they're at their best. The Seahawks game this year, the Colts game, not an elite team, but a Monday night showcase game, Baltimore a couple weeks ago. To me, those are the best performances of this Titans team this year against maybe some of the better competition and on the biggest stages. I think you have another opportunity to prove that on Thursday.
I agree. I think the Seahawks win looks better and better. And Jacksonville.
Right.
That's
we didn't necessarily know it at the time.
At the time, yeah. You have to beat Jacksonville to win. Well, now that win looks awfully good. And so you do have two quality wins. They have had a weak schedule. The schedule still is weak going forward after this game on Thursday. You've got some very beatable teams on the schedule here, and you want to take advantage of those opportunities. But we're going to find out a lot on Thursday. So with that in mind, we're going to go to Pittsburgh next, and we're going to talk to Jim Colony, 93.7 The Fan morning show host. Might even work in a question about Saturday night's matchup between the Predators and the Penguins. Maybe one question there.
That would be good.
Jim knows a thing or two about both of those teams, so looking forward to chatting with him. So stay tuned. 3D continues here on 102.5 The Game. We're just getting started. Hope you enjoy it. 10:25 here on 3D, ESPN Radio Nashville. Willie Donick with guest host Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 sitting in for Darren McFarland today. And Nashville-Pittsburgh, big theme of the last 7 days or so, Saturday night.
The sports world, really, all year.
Oh, yeah. it's fun to have a little rivalry in hockey now with Pittsburgh coming to town on Saturday night. It was an epic game. What a game it was. Predators won in a shootout. And now it'll be The Titans heading to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers on Thursday night in the national spotlight. Jim Colony is the morning show host for 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. He has been nice enough to join us before. Jim, good to have you back on the show.
Yeah, nice to be back. I'd already forgotten about the hockey game on Saturday night. That was a very good game. It was a real fun game to watch, and it didn't take a whole lot for them to get back into that playoff mode in that game. It was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, it had a playoff feel. It had the intensity, you know, the feistiness, the chippiness after the whistle. It was good stuff. And Penguins went back. I noticed, Jim, and had a great dramatic win last night to get things going on home ice there. I still wait for them to – I feel like they're kind of a smoldering volcano there. They're about to start ripping off 5-6 wins in a row, I think, at any time.
I'm not saying that. I'm on my way to practice right now, actually. But I'm not saying that they don't care right now. But, I mean, they played so much hockey over the last 2 years. And I don't know if that'll manifest itself with the Predators at some point this season, where you've just played so much you just can't get up for every game, which is why it was fun to see the game on Saturday, because I think it definitely got the Penguins' attention. And it was good. And now what we have this week is we have a couple of football teams that I'm guessing that the Titans agree with the Steeler players and that they have absolutely no use for Thursday night football games.
Oh, man, I'll tell you. So Jim, what's the talk? Do you guys talk in your circles a lot? I mean, if we did away with the Thursday night game, don't you think most of the players would say thumbs up to that?
Oh, absolutely. But the problem is, you guys can speak to this, is that if you take away the Thursday night game, then that takes away another revenue stream. Salary cap goes down. Players' salaries go down, theoretically. But, you know, the thing that I floated to Ramon Foster, former Tennessee great, we have him on our station. We have him on the morning show every week.
Yes, he is. I don't know if I would call it an internship, Jim, but during an off season one time, he sat in with us for a few weeks. It was great to get to know Ramon. He is great on the air. I think he's a natural. You would agree?
There's no question about it. Plus, he tells it like it is. In most instances, although he won't tell you exactly what he thinks about the Roethlisberger Haley stuff, which I'm sure we'll get into, but I floated to Ramon the concept that the owners will say, okay, we'll take away Thursday night, but, oh, you guys just give us two more regular season games so we get 18, and that way we can, you know, make the money up that way. But, you know, no matter what you do, you know, the Thursday night game is actually a safety issue. We saw what happened last week with the Seattle-Arizona game and all these guys getting hurt, and including one of the league's marquee players in Richard Sherman. I can't remember how many quarterbacks went down on Thursday night in Thursday night games, but whatever. There's a bunch of quarterbacks that are already out for the season. You know, heaven forbid, you know, if something were to happen to one of the quarterbacks in this game. You know, the Titans are tied for first. The Steelers are in first in their division. You lose a key player or two, and all of a sudden that changes things. And I think we've seen, it seems to me that it's becoming more of a trend. It's not just, it's a little out of hand this year. It'll go away next year. I just don't see it going away. Although, interestingly, the Thursday night football TV package has not been renewed, right? It's still out there. Maybe the networks don't want it. Maybe they're coming to the realization that there's a bit of oversaturation going on in the NFL.
Well, it's just not as good of a product as what you see in the other time slots over the weekend when teams have a full week of rest. Jim, one of the remarkable things for the Titans this week, the Titans have been fairly beat up through the first half of the season, piecing guys in and out of the lineup. They had full participation. Everybody on the roster was there yesterday for their only real practice of the week before going to a short week game Thursday night in Pittsburgh. What's the situation for Pittsburgh on the short week, injury-wise?
Well, you know, it's funny because the Steelers were in a similar situation, I think, maybe it might have been last week, where, the only guy who was quote-unquote injured was James Harrison. And I don't know if you guys follow him on Twitter and Instagram, but he's throwing up pictures of him, you know, doing, I don't know, like 800 million pound dumbbell curls. And he supposedly has a bad back. But everybody was healthy. And so because they got Stephon Tuitt back, they got Marcus Gilbert back. And then what happens? Then they lose. Joe Haden goes out with a broken leg, which apparently isn't as bad as it could have been, although we still don't have the definitive word on that. You know, Mike Mitchell was playing through an Achilles injury, and he suffered an ankle injury. in that game. And so all of a sudden, their secondary, which has been much improved, thanks in large part to the addition of Hayden and a finally healthy Mike Mitchell, and things changed. Although having said that, the defense actually got better in the second half of that game and gave the Steelers a chance to win. So, you know, just be careful, because just when you think everything's fine in terms of health, all of a sudden, you know, things can go sideways and sideways in a bit of a hurry. And, the secondary, to me, that's an issue tomorrow night without Hayden. The Steelers are weakened at corner. They still don't play that much man-to-man, even with Hayden there. Artie Burns in his second year has been up and down. He's made a lot of plays, but he's also been burnt on occasion, like he was last weekend. And then you've got, you know, Mike Hilton's a rookie in the slot. Now you've got Cody Sensabaugh. You guys are familiar with him.
Sure.
He's going to make the start. So, you know, it's Marcus Mariota, from what I'm told, and you guys again can attest to this, has been ridiculously efficient. And so that might be something that he and the Titans can take advantage of on Thursday.
Jim, I'm glad you bring up the defense, because metrically to me, it seems like maybe that's what that they've gotten back a little bit to the old Steelers defenses this year. It kind of looks like a Dick LeBeau defense to me when I watch them, and the numbers seem like that. It seems like if there's been improvement this year with the Steelers, it's been getting back to their roots on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, maybe. Keith Butler in the last couple of years has tried to put his stamp on it. One of the criticisms of Dick LeBeau's defenses, at least in Pittsburgh, that you play that zone blitz, but it turns into a soft zone, and it's too easy to complete passes downfield. You know, the philosophy was kind of not necessarily a bend but don't break. It was, okay, we'll let you get some plays here and there. You can nickel and dime us, but then when the field gets short, and all of a sudden, you know, you're operating on your 10th play of a drive, then a team might be more prone to turnovers. But you know, turnovers had gone away at the end of Nick's tenure here. I think they're blitzing less under Keith Butler, although the last game in Indianapolis in the second half when they were coming back, man, they turned, safety Sean Davis and the slot corner Mike Hilton, these guys were blitzing all over the place, and it worked. But again, this was against Jacoby Brissett, who's an inexperienced quarterback, a guy like Mariota, even though he's not very old, he's been around long enough at least that he might be able to exploit that kind of stuff.
We're talking with Jim Colony, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, breaking down Titans and Steelers tomorrow night in Pittsburgh. So, Jim, looking at the numbers in terms of yards and things like that, the Steelers' offense still looks as formidable as ever. They haven't had the explosion of that 35-40 point afternoon that they were so capable of doing week in and week out last year, it seemed like. So tell me, what any difference you're seeing between the offense, or you think they're just due to break out?
I would say they're just due, but I've been saying that for I don't know how many weeks. Now, Jacksonville has turned out to be the real deal. But when they came into Heinz Field, I think it was, week four, their defensive numbers were not that great. And it looked like, we're all saying, okay, the Steelers are back home now. That game against Chicago, that was an aberration. The offense is going to put it together this week. And then they couldn't even get a touchdown. And now, like I said, as it turns out, that when he's not trying to strangle A.J. Green, that Jalen Ramsey is really good. And he was really good in that game against Antonio Brown. Having said that, it's like, okay, well, all right, they had trouble. Maybe Jacksonville's better than we thought. Well, they'll be better against, fill in the blank with the team. And they have won four in a row. But, the Colts are terrible. And they had the worst, the most points against in the league, and the Steelers couldn't score until they got a late field goal in the first half, and they looked horrible. The offensive line was bad. Ben Roethlisberger was inconsistent. You got Martavis Bryant not coming back to fight for an underthrown pass. They're both at fault there. They're just disconnects all over the place. And so, they played nine games, and so we can still say that, they'll straighten it out. Until we see it, there's no reason to believe that they can get it straightened out. But you look at, they're supposed to have one of the top three offensive lines in the league. They're certainly getting paid like it. They've got a future Hall of Fame quarterback. They've got a future Hall of Fame receiver. They've got a potentially future Hall of Fame running back. Look at all that stuff. And they haven't even scored 30 points in a game once. So, you know, Ben says, "Go, you know, I'd rather run more no huddle." And the offensive coordinator says, "I don't know if we should run no huddle." And then they get into it, and then I don't know. It's just, you just wonder what the hell's going on here. And quite honestly, I don't have an answer for it. The Steelers are trying to figure out an answer for it, and so far this season we haven't seen it. But you know, I know a lot of the guys on the offensive line. Probably, I really like the offensive linemen. It's a really good group, but those guys have not been good. I think it really does start with those guys. And they said, you know, speaking of coaches yelling, that Mike Munchak came over at the end of the first half and basically read the riot act to them because they were playing like crap. And that's when they finally got it together with that late field goal drive. And then in the second half, for the most part, they looked a lot better.
Do you find yourself on your show and in your circles doing the same things we're doing? Would you say, you know, why is it so hard for a good team on paper like the Steelers to put away a team that looks like they've got so many problems like the Colts? And we're saying the same things here because the Titans have won four in a row, but we're still, I mean, there's a tag that a lot of people, even nationally, are saying, you know, very shaky 6-3. They're 6-3, but they have beaten these teams. And you know, like the Steelers, you mentioned the Bears game earlier. There's all these teams, like, these teams are terrible. How is these games even close? But at the same time, when you win, you are what your record says you are.
Yeah, I don't know who the first coach to say that was. Maybe it was Parcells, or you know what? Maybe it was like you know, Paul Brown way back in the day. I don't know, but you're right. And you know, we have Ben Roethlisberger on our station too, and he was, you know, he came right out of the gate swinging when he was on Monday, talking about how, you know, he often says that this isn't college football. He still uses the BCS term, as probably a lot of us do. You know, saying how you don't get credit for style points. There are no polls here. It's just you either win or you lose. And yet, to me, that's a sign of frustration because he knows he needs to be better. He knows that the offense needs to be better and should be better. But, you know, so it'll be fun, I guess, tomorrow night because, and quite honestly, you know, well, the Steelers division is bad. The AFC North is, I guess you would say, uncharacteristically down this year. And the Steelers have no competition at all within their division, although they will make games closer than they should be. I didn't even notice. I looked at the Titans' record as of you know, Sunday night, and I'm like, whoa, these guys are 6-3.
Exactly. You know, yeah. So I think Titans fans were doing that on Sunday night.
Yeah, maybe. But whatever's going to happen here on Thursday, I would guess it's going to be a close game. Just because that's the way the Steelers play, and it sounds to me like you guys have experienced the same thing. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, would you be surprised, or I say, would people in Pittsburgh be surprised if all of a sudden this was the game that the Steelers decided to score 34 points? I don't think they'd be surprised, and they'd be relieved. But then, just as you think, okay, they've snapped out of it, you know, then the week from Sunday night they'll play the Packers and look like garbage on Sunday night. You know, so who knows? And I just know that as a morning radio guy, I can't tell you how irritated I am with the Steelers schedule with four consecutive games starting at 8:30. It's just, I just can't wait for that to be over.
Yeah, that's not a lot of sleep for a morning guy, that's for sure. Jim, there's so much familiarity between these two teams. Obviously, they're old divisional rivals. We remember those grudge matches back in the AFC Central. It's a big game coming up. You've got Dick LeBeau coming back, Mike Mularkey coming back. You mentioned Mike Munchak on that staff there. Yeah. How big of a game? The Steelers have played a lot of big games, but what will the feeling be tomorrow night? Is this going to be viewed as one of the big games of the season in the way it is here right now?
Yeah, and Jim, in context of that too, what about fans in the seats? Because I know there's a lot of places around the league, and the Titans are one of them, where even if you have a good team, it's hard to get all of the seats filled with your fans and have that atmosphere that you want, especially for a showcase game.
I have never had that question asked in kind of in reverse, because a lot of times, you know, I'd be, and I don't know what it'll be like with you, if the game was down there, you guys would be saying, well, the Steelers always travel well. There were a lot of Penguin fans here last spring. How many fans, you know, I've never had that question asked, like the Steelers are worried about visiting fans. You know, no, I don't think that'll be a problem. You know, this isn't a Pitt game. which they don't have. I shouldn't have said that because I have to host the coach's show tonight. But you know, it's Steelers will be fine. But I will say that that they've increased capacity, the seating capacity, so that Heinz Field's now up. I think it's up around 67. That it used to be 62 or 3. They put some seats in the south end zone. It used to be the open end zone, and to increase capacity because they sell out every game. Now, they still technically sell out every game, but you'll see attendance announced probably in the 62,000 range, because people are staying home. But it's not like those seats are going to be filled with Tennessee Titans fans. So I think there's still a significant home field advantage for the Steelers. But we've noticed, and you guys probably talk about this too, that you guys are, we all have big screen TVs at home. Some people have man caves with surround sound and all the amenities. You can get up and walk to the fridge and not pay $10 for a beer. And you get all the replays and everything else. So it's home is a really nice place to watch a game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just going to be an ongoing battle with the NFL, even with the franchises like the Steelers that have a consecutive sellout streak going, because sometimes, and the weather's supposed to be okay on Thursday, but sometimes it's just, hey, let's just watch it at home because we can actually get not a better experience, but a better view of everything that's going on.
Should be fun. Couple of first place teams doing battle. We know the terrible towels will be waving. We'll be watching that tomorrow night, Jim. Yep. And I want to warn you before we let you go here that your old buddy and mine, John Burton, just landed in Pittsburgh. So look out.
Uh-oh.
On the roads and the bars and restaurants and all that for the next 24 or 48 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's nothing that I can say about JB that you people haven't already discovered. All I know is that the first night that I got into Nashville for the Cup Final, we were at an establishment on Broadway, and here comes JB texts me and says, "Are you guys here?" Answer, yes. He goes, "I'll be over after I get off the air." And I had like zero sleep and stayed up until like 3 in the morning Eastern time because of that guy.
You saw Johnny Nashville.
You just can't. The midnight mayor of Broadway, John Burton.
That's my guy.
Good stuff. Hey, Jim, right. Enjoy the game on Thursday. Thank you very much for joining us today.
I will. Anytime, you guys. We'll see you.
All right. Jim. Good stuff. I always like talking to Jim Colony. Can really break it down for you. Big, big game coming up tomorrow night. No question. Come back. We'll wrap up hour number one. Don't forget, at 11 o'clock, we'll talk to Kermit Davis, Middle Tennessee basketball coach. He's got him. It's two straight years, powerhouse teams, got a first win of the season. We'll talk about what's coming up for them as college basketball unfolds for this season. Later in the show, Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. He'll join us for his Around the NFL segments from 12 to about 12:40. And then later in the show, Chris Mason will join me at 1 o'clock, and then Eddie George at 1:25. So an action-packed show today on 3D. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming. First hour, churning along. Here on 3D, 102.5 The Game. Something that you
I always have to
to
pace myself, by the way, for this. I'm used to like
used
the
to
3 minutes
short bursts.
I'm like a sprinter. I'm the
all
Usain
the preparation
Bolt
behind the scenes
when it comes to these things. You train and then you just go out there and it's done. It's over. And here we are. We're 49 minutes in. We still got 3 hours to go.
Well, we were touching on this AFC playoff race, and we were looking at the Titans and we're saying, regardless of what happens in this game, and this is such a huge opportunity for the Titans tomorrow night, but win or lose, the schedule is still very favorable for them. They're going to be favored in a lot of their games. It's just they've hit the jackpot in terms of strength of schedule. And there's no penalty for strength of schedule
right,
like there is in college basketball or even in college football now with the rankings, where they're going to look and see who you played, and that could cost you depending. There's no penalty for that at the NFL. You play who you play.
The only downfall for the Titans is the fact that the Jaguars have the easiest schedule in the NFL the rest
easiest
of the way.
Yeah.
So when you look at specifically the division, maybe the Jags have a leg up because they truly don't play anyone the rest of the way.
That's true. Now, the Bills are one of the teams vying for AFC wildcard. And before the season, we were like,
they're in the
AFC South
right
is winnable, but I don't know if you can win the wildcard. There's so many other good teams out there. Look at the AFC West. It's just like it usually never fails. Something in the NFL completely will surprise you. There's a lot mm-hmm. of teams that you're just like, there's no way that team could not be in contention. But here the Bills are. They've been awful the last couple of weeks. Just terrible. But they're still 5-4, and they're in the hunt. They're in a wild card position right now.
Yep.
That's how gettable the wild card is right now for the Titans. and the Bills have replaced Tyrod Taylor with, of all people, Nathan Peterman. Now, Steve, what is your recollection of Nathan Peterman when he was at Tennessee?
I remember covering a game of Tennessee at Florida, going into the Swamp. It was his first ever start. And he looked like the most uncomfortable quarterback I have ever seen. He just looked completely lost out there. And you walked away from that game, I know a lot of Vols fans did, said, this guy's never going to be our quarterback. He's never going to cut it. And, you know, eventually he left and moved around in the country and had a decent finish to his career at Pittsburgh, winds up in the NFL. But now he's a starting quarterback for a team that's in playoff position right now. I mean, that blows my mind. And for me, it's real problems for Buffalo. I don't see with that mess on your offense and turmoil at that position, the most important position on the field, I don't see how they stay in that position. I think it opens up a spot for Oakland. But to your point, the AFC is so bad at this point that the Titans, being three games above 500, are in a glorious position to finish this thing out.
Oakland is the team I think about of, you know, just get it together. You guys should get in there. That team's too talented to be where they are. The Bills, I don't know if you can blame Tyrod Taylor, though. I didn't watch their game. Probably, it was probably good for my health that I didn't watch the game. Nobody should have to sit through a 47-3 game. Can you imagine a Bills fan sitting down, getting ready for that game? And
the offense
was
good, but largely they just got ran over by the Saints in that game. And last time I checked, Tyrod Taylor wasn't lining up at safety.
And the game I did watch, I watched it with Pete Weber, who is a humongous Bills fan. We watched the Thursday night game where they lost to the Jets, and they didn't look very good at all in that game. They could not protect Tyrod Taylor. Only his mobility kept him from even having a chance to make some plays. So I don't know how they're to me, that's the issue with Peterman. You're throwing him in there with a shaky offensive line.
Yeah, and that reminds me even more of that game in the Swamp, because that was an offensive line that couldn't protect him, and he just looked in trouble the entire day.
There's some guys who are ex-Tennessee Vol quarterbacks who I would have said, there is no – you're telling me this guy is going to start a game in the NFL? Jonathan Crompton.
Uh-huh.
And now Nathan Peterman. But even some other guys that have left, you know, and never to be heard from again, you would think. And here's Riley Ferguson over at Memphis having a really good year.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on over
prospect.
There.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think that's a criticism of Butch Jones in a lot of ways, and that Crompton obviously predates that.
Kiffin actually revived his college career.
Sure.
And he ended up looking a lot better.
But I think Butch Jones has had some talented guys over there that didn't necessarily mesh with his offensive system. And I think, you know, if you want to criticize two things that Butch Jones did, I think it was probably his rigidness offensively to just say, this is what we do. I don't care how the game's changed. I don't care what our talent is here. This is our offense. I think that's been one part of his problem. And then the other thing is just his personality and the way things went when adversity struck, all of the catchphrases, the way he handled the media, playing favorites in the media, playing favorites with recruits, just that personality, I think, caught up to him, especially when adversity struck. When things started to turn, his own behavior helped it spiral out of control.
Now, speaking of coaches getting fired or people getting fired, Arkansas athletic director Jeff Long has been fired. Now, this is a guy that was a pretty heavy hitter in college athletics for a while. Not only athletic director at an SEC school, but he was on, I think, the NCAA tournament selection committee for basketball for a while. I'm pretty sure he was on the football.
He was the chair.
He was the chair, right?
Yeah.
He is going to be fired or has been fired, and they're going to announce it later today.
That's remarkable.
Now, the other thing that is tied to this is Brett Bielema, who has not done well at all. And a lot of people are speculating that he could be relieved. Now, here's the kicker. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago on our show, Steve. I don't know if you're aware of this, but do you know what Brett Bielema's buyout is if they let him go in the calendar year of 2017? Just take a guess.
I think it's $12 million, something in that neighborhood.
$15 million.
Wow.
15.
Yeah.
Just for him. Now, I would think there's some people on the staff that would probably be owed some money.
Well, we saw at Tennessee, it's $8.5 million for Butch and about $5 million more for the assistants. So, yeah.
And that doesn't, but for Arkansas, Think about that. 8.5 is a lot. We're talking about almost double that.
Exactly.
Just for your head coach.
That's why I think a lot of people thought he was safe until they've totally imploded here. So we'll see what happens. The other thing about that one, and this is just an interesting thing for the whole sport in general, I think that drops dramatically for Bielema in 2018. So the moment you get to January 1st, it comes down in a big way.
It comes down, but it's only to like 12 or something like that. So it's still a big buyout.
All of these are big buyouts at some point. But the question I have with some of these is if contracts are structured that way with the new recruiting deal, that's what a lot of people are worried about. Like at Tennessee, you fire Butch, how quickly can you get a coach in because the early signing period's in December.
Right.
How quickly you can turn this around. Is it almost advantageous for schools now to keep a coach like Bielema, let him get through the recruiting class,
and then
let him go and bring somebody else in when you have all the guys already locked up? I mean, that seems kind of a shady way to handle your business. And in a case like Tennessee where the momentum's so far gone, Butch was already losing the recruits as he was sitting there. So it maybe wouldn't always work, but is that now a thing that's going to come into the college football landscape?
You'd have to endure some serious howling from your fan bases. Why is this guy still the coach? I can't believe it.
Just wait. To borrow a line from Aaron Rodgers, relax.
But also, cautionary tale for all of you. You got to go get an established coach, you know, for Tennessee. You got to go get a guy that's done it. That's what Arkansas did. They paid huge dollars to pry Brett Bielema away. Late in the, if I remember correctly, it was December. It was deep into the off season where they got him to leave Wisconsin. And in 29-32 is his record. So it's not always the big name. It's not always the big dollars, the established guy. It's an inexact science.
Tough to win in the SEC West. I mean, there's good football programs over there.
Hmm. When we come back, we'll shift gears. We'll talk to Kermit Davis. We'll continue to introduce the college basketball season to you. Middle Tennessee has been a powerhouse the last couple of years. We'll talk about this year's Blue Raiders next on 3D.